Blog Talk Radio.
Story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationship, experiences, environment, genetics, all take hand in molding the immature adult we are today. That was a joke. Come on, we're on the air.
So welcome to the Double Helix, where we examine the X's and Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. So get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is poetry that we are made of.
I'm the Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey.
And I'm Aphasiana. We will be featuring poems from our contest on the website allpoetry.com. We are part of a group on the website called Late Night Poets. If you are in the group, you can follow along the chat to read the poems as we do for the full experience. However, you do not need to be in the group to contribute poems, call in, or listen.
Thank you, Fill My Eyes from Late Night Poets, and thank you, Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Dexter, for hosting with me, and to everyone who contributed poems or calls in. Your writing is what we are here for.
Good evening out there in poetry land, late night poets, and everybody else as well. It is your host here, Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey, a.k.a. Dex Arcana, a.k.a. Dex Skywalker, Duke Skywalker, here with me, as always, is Aphasiana over there laughing and giggling in the background.
I love how we introduce ourselves in the intro, and then you show up like 2 seconds before it goes live and introduce yourself again, but say your name wrong. That was awesome.
You know those that like video of that person falling down the stairs at like the train station? That's how I like to intro into shows.
Yeah. That's how I live in general. Tumbling down.
I know. I need like like to be bubble boy. Like I need to be in a bubble or something at all times. But what is fantastic here and what we have great going on is that you have a fantastic contest up this week, kind of about legacy and about living on. But we will get to that here shortly. Well, Faziana, why don't you explain that?
Sure. But first, I'm going to welcome our first caller, Lauren. Thank you for calling.
Oh, perfect. We're on.
Welcome. Okay, so now I will also explain the prompts, as you said, Dex. So, like Dexter said, it's about legacy, and here are the quotes. The goal isn't to live forever. It is to create something that will, by Chuck Palahniuk. Carve your name on hearts, not tombstones. A legacy is etched into the minds of others and the stories they share about you. Shannon L. Alder. If you would not be forgotten as soon as you are dead, either write something worth reading or do something worth writing. Benjamin Franklin. So those are
awesome
our prompts for tonight. Yeah.
Very well done. And we have a whole stack night of poetry. And we're glad to have you on board, Laurent.
Definitely.
Already okay, starting off with the mute monster.
I had to get to the mute button. You know, it's a long, arduous task to get there.
Oh, I know. I fat finger it sometimes and hit hang up and then just come in and go, oh, I must have got dropped, and just pretend.
Are you projecting next?
I think he is.
Yeah.
I was in video conferencing all day, and people were constantly stuck by the mute monster, and you can just see on their screen that they're talking. It's like, we can't hear you.
Yeah. Well, luckily we can't see anybody on the screen while talking and doing this show. We'd probably have some weird guests popping in and out from time to time in a robe, and we'd have as many of the bloopers as you can get.
And like 90% of it would be me.
You got Naomi Sarah waiting to come on, by the way.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, here she is. It shows up strange. 1-1-1-1-1-1-1.
Oh, that's
hello.
Skype.
Hello. Welcome.
Hello. Well, happy to be there. Hello,
happy to have you here.
Hi.
Hello.
Glad to have you. Well, with that being said here, and we have a board full of poetry, why don't we get started? Why don't you take us where we need to go first?
Well, 1 second. We also have Pam. So welcome,
Pam. Hello,
everyone. Good to be here.
Hello, Pam.
Hi, Laura. And hi, who else is there? Dexter?
We have,
yep.
That's right, the Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey. We have Laurent. We have Pam and me, Faziana.
Yeah. Hi, everybody.
Yep.
All right. Why don't we get started with Lawrence's poem? And Naomi, I'm going to put you second.
Oh, no. Well, I can help read, and I can hang out for a while, so you don't have to put me on right away. It's okay.
Oh, well, thank you for being here. That's awesome.
I'll hang out with you for a while.
All right.
Okay.
Cool.
I chose as the prompt... if you would not be forgotten as soon as you were dead, either write something worth reading or do something worth writing. I've always thought that The Time Machine by H.G. Wells was something worth reading on a subject that is fascinating, I think, to everyone. What would happen if we could go back in time? Would it be a good thing? Would it be a bad thing? Would it be abused? Would it be used for good? Probably for bad. So this basically assumes that a time machine is possible. And it's called The Time Machine. Magnetic sails billow in the indigo moon glow. Breath of imagination pulls us from safe harbor beyond the blue into black shades on the far side of conception. Transported to any time you like. Mandatory pause at the crucifixion. Taste the pain of thorns crowning belief and disbelief. Thunder rolls, multitudes weeping, spawning eons of self-flagellation. Imagine dragons, quoth the bard, and we were they, threatening damsels, laying waste to armies and tumbling kings from lofty spires of gold, transformed from lead by a philosopher's stone. No requiem for history exists, only observation. Beware subtle hands altering circumstance, else premature death of a butterfly bears deadly consequence. Somewise, where falleth the eye not. Billy the Kid was no kid. Doc Holliday never cheated at cards. Wyatt was cool under pressure. Kit Carson was real, and Seas of Buffalo died under fire, without need. Trace the willow branches of man, where they bend, weeping, to a bloody soil, crisscrossed with trenches, filled with the dead and living of a hell on earth, returning a quarter century later. Machine of time, so named, so aimed at the bitter machinations of existence, dangerous weapon or miracle of truth? Do we want to know it then, in sooth? Depopulate ignorance, anger those vested in it? Common fury unleashed, fire would stretch to the sky, a last great candle. As civilization guttered and fell, dark age in the offing amidst the questionable splendors of suicidal technical achievement. End poem.
Great read, Laurent, and great piece that you brought here this evening. Why don't we start off with you, Naomi, for comments on this one?
Yeah, I found this, well, I always enjoy Laurent's writes. They're so deep, they're so layered, they're so eloquently written. And I love how he drifts through history here, names these people, that these famous, I like famous characters. And all through. And how he caught the last, how he sums it all up in the last stanza. And I just love this right all through. So bravo, Laurent.
Fantastic comment. And Pam, what did you think about this right?
I really like this. It's intelligent and philosophical. I like how it takes a look back in the history of mankind and the whole idea of the butterfly effect, and how if we did the question that I'm sure everyone has always asked themselves at one time or another is, you know, if we could build a time machine and travel back in time, what could we do with it, or should we even build one? And I really like this all the way through. Well, I especially like the stanza starts, no requiem for history exists, only observation. And then trace the willow branches of man where they bend, weeping to a bloody soil, crisscrossed with trenches filled. That reminds us that throughout history there has been so many sacrifices made and the horror of violence. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Great comment. Pam, you know what part that, you know, well, there's a couple of parts that really stand out. You know, just your imagery that you use. I like the far, on the far side of conception, or beyond the blue and black shades, the rolls, the thunder rolls, multitudes weeping. But what's the question that stood out to me is, you know, do we want to know it then? You know, in sooth, you know, do we know? I think at this point in time, we kind of know what's right and wrong and what should be happening and should not. Let's just say that you did have a time machine and you went back in time and you had all the answers. Would anybody, would the ignorant and would the population even listen to what you had to say? I think is what the angle that you're kind of getting at on that in that part is people are kind of ignorant to the truth today. I mean, we know what's kind of happening and we still blindly kind of follow it. And you know, what would happen if we were able to kind of go back and change these things and the effects that it would have. But I just thought that this was a very intriguing write and, very well done, and the wording on it was top notch. So very well done, Laurent.
Well, the assumption is made up front that if you had a time machine, you'd be able to prove what it was that you said. Because having achieved the time machine, one can certainly then go ahead and prove its existence. I just felt that if you had the time machine and could go back and show history as it actually happened, as opposed to how history was written by the victors with their own particular slant on it, that by revealing many truths throughout history that have been covered up by the rewriting or the writing of history by the victors, that would anger the population to such a degree that it would cause chaos. Have you ever heard of Bradbury's butterfly theory?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Good enough.
Yes. You know, and this is also sub too, kind of when you said that kind of anger in the population at the history of it. You know, it was something that I heard too, that there was that the start of cowboys and things, and there was a lot of black people that were cowboys, and hence the name, the word cowboy is racist in its origin, and that it was meant for boy, you know, and so it was like, and now all of a sudden cowboys is like the West, and it's, you know, and all of these things. So there's a lot of different things that are painted a certain way in history, the way that we kind of, like you said, the victor was able to write it. Faziana, why don't you leave last comment on Laurent's piece?
Well, I really like what Laurent said about this being, you know, recognizing that history isn't necessarily, in a lot of cases we know it's not. I mean, it's definitely evolved the knowledge just since I was in school, and I'm not that old, that it comes out that like, we were getting a very specific view of how, you know, clarification on things. You have some wonderful lines here. I really liked spawning eons of self-flagellation. And here we go. Where is it? No requiem for history exists, only observation. Beware subtle hands altering circumstances. And, yeah, you bring the butter effect into it really well. There's so much here that is intelligent references. I really like that. I wrote this poem and to everything that it means. So thank you so much for submitting this.
Thank you.
And I want to welcome, of course, Thomas B. to the show. Did you get to hear the poem?
No, I got here well after it. Glad to see all of you this evening, and hello to everyone. There, I didn't miss anybody. How are you all doing?
Oh, awesome. Here we go. All right, well, I'm glad you could join us here, Tom. And fantastic poem there, Laurent. Where are we headed to next, Aphasiana?
Naomi, when you're ready, I'll get you to read yours.
Okay. Mine is called My Words. I picked through my words like fragmented shells, looking for the few that made the journey in one piece, inking the place where the lighthouse peeks over the dunes, etching in print the sadness of hollow beaches, once filled with laughter, the empty harbor once bursting with smiles, each neighbor a friend, a family or friend or both, searching words that whisper as a softed summer's breeze, the hand weaves scarlet autumns and paint wildflowers dancing atop cliff sides. But my words remain as victims of the shipwreck, stepping out of their watery grave for a brief stroll along the beach, as ghosts silently drifting like the sunny afternoon that is softly slipping away into a moment in time, as I am, as you are. Perhaps, just perhaps, one day my words, warm and torn by the waves, will become shaped into pieces of unique sea glass that have resisted the passage of time.
Amazing read and write, Naomi. Fantastic. Why don't we start with you, Thomas, on comments on this one?
Okay. The beginning with I picked through my words like fragmented shells, looking for the few that made the journey in one piece. It's such a beautiful statement of how our brains seem to work as we try to gather our thoughts together and give meaning to things. And then slipping into this metaphor of the lighthouse and the harbor and the way that these are places that are both memory and yet have a life of their own and a history of their own. And that in some ways we are only visitors taking from them what we need. And then the way you bring back in the words so that in the end, the art, the poetry, the language of the thoughts and the meaning that we try to seep into those words, almost like sand, almost like waves, but that ending with the beauty of having them become as memorable and as permanent and as discoverable, because we stumble upon most poems that we really love. I describing them as pieces of unique sea glass is simply genius. I love this piece. Enough said.
Great comment, Thomas. And Laurent, what did you think about this poem?
Well, I like the poem a great deal, first of all. Her words, Naomi's words, are her legacy. And she graces the reader with the imagery that she feels, with what she observes. Inking the place where the lighthouse peeks over the dunes, etching in print the sadness of hollow beaches, once filled with laughter, the empty harbor, once bursting with smiles, as she writes and describes what she sees, it becomes evident that her words are strong, but they still remain, as she says, as victims of a shipwreck, stepping out of their watery grave for a brief stroll along the beach as ghosts, silently drifting like the sunny afternoon that is softly slipping away. The words stand out for a moment and then perhaps do slip away in that moment in time, even though one wishes that some of the words survive and, as she says, become pieces of unique sea glass that have resisted the passage of time. In the writing, will there be something that survives her and carries her memory forward? There is a real sense of, I hate to say wistfulness, but perhaps it is wistfulness, a wondering, you know, is anything that I write going to last, or will they be lost at sea? Because largely you use the metaphor of the ocean, of the sea, of watery shipwrecks, of beaches. And I think it's quite beautiful in the way you wrote it, and certainly addresses the hope that what we write will survive us for years. Great job.
Thank you, Laurent.
Great comment, Laurent. And Pam, what did you think about this?
I thought this was a really beautiful write on the importance of words and how oftentimes we struggle to find the right words at the right time. And then sometimes we look back with regret, and then, as was mentioned, there are times when we wonder if any of the words we write or that we speak will really ever make a difference in the end. And I really like this all the way through, but I especially like the imagery of as ghosts silently drifting like the sunny afternoon that is softly sipping away into a moment of time, as I am, as you are, perhaps, just perhaps, one day my words worn and torn by the waves will become shaped. Just a beautiful and thoughtful write, and very well done.
Thank you, Sam.
And Afasiana, what did you think?
I really, really love the last line. Think that perhaps, just perhaps, really makes you stop and think like you felt important right there. That perhaps, like, you know, she's about to say something. And then the idea that, you know, words, her ideas, will be worn and torn, they'll fade away, but some of them will show up as even more beautiful after the sand within her mind anymore. They've become unique sea glass. There's like permanence to that art from her challenges. I think that's beautiful ending, and a great testament to this prompt, where a piece of you can listen to the words she has written and preserved a piece of her mind. So I thought this was wonderful.
Thank you, Afasiana.
Great comment, Afasiana. And those comments are difficult to follow up. I thought that this was a stunning write, Naomi, and thank you for being here this evening and sharing this with us. So with that being said, Afasiana, where are we heading to next?
I have Thomas's poem up on the board.
Okay. This is Old Salt. One. When the breeze is on shore, there is a slight chill in the air. I can smell the salty promise an ocean brings. It is usually evening. The sun turning white on the horizon makes my heart tighten. I turn back to the house, turn up the music. you could tell when he returned the house, no longer musty, awoke to the necessity of being ship-shape. The first weekend was filled with yeasty aromas, wheat risen waffles, smothered in butter and maple syrup, his way of letting us know we were loved. He was home, and we are a family. Some things are forever in the present tense. Two. The gulls cry, phone too far inshore, cry out for their lost love, their lost home. The fog blows off the lake. It catters like letters read too often, obscuring the present with memories. I can hear the foghorns. I turn around like a lighthouse. I can feel him everywhere. The sun melts the fog. The wind takes the gulls. I remember the smell of ocean. A father, long gone. End poem.
Great piece, Thomas. Fantastic, right? Let's go with you, Afaziana, to start with.
Well, I think this is really touching in the connection to the father. Some things are forever in present tense. And there are some things that stick with us, and it's, you know, you can't seem to put it in the past. Talk about it, it's like it's still going on, but that person sometimes forget to say, you know, they were, you think they are, because in your mind, still are whatever they were to you. And for some reason, I really love the part about the waffles, because I think food is very strongly associated with memories. Food, to traditions, to, you know, to holidays, to times that were special as a family and you were all gathered around. So waffles is like that happy brunch kind of thing where everyone's gathered, and it's like waffles brings up that sense of family. I mean, just hearing about the waffles, I'm picturing like family moments. I feel like the way that you describe that fits really nicely in this, and you're going to be talking about like, the smell of it, because that brings up those key memories. Smells and the tastes is really smart, because that's it solidifies, you know, that essence of the feeling of the father. So it might not be something that is like a fact about him, but when there are waffles, there's this feeling of being loved like you were in those family times. So I think that's beautiful.
Great comment, Faziana. We heard 95% of it, but you might want to come out from underneath the basement steps for the rest of the show. But let's go with Laurent. What did you think about this, right?
This is a piece that uncovers the legacy of a powerful, influential figure, in this case the father, and demonstrates the emotion of his absence. In times past, when we were young, the parental units, the mother and the father, are at the top of the family pyramid, so to speak. They make the family complete. Without them, there is an absence felt, and when they arrive from wherever they were, all of a sudden, everything begins to come alive. For instance, Tom says you could tell when he returned, the house no longer musty, awoke to the necessity of being shipshape. Once the father is there, the picture is complete, and he personifies the house in a charming way. You know, the house awakes. Oh, father is here. And, of course, it's his presence that completes that completes everyone, really, if you think about it. for his dad, you know. He said this, he said that. It's not the same without him. Oh, he's here. All of a sudden, everything gels. And right down to the house, which knows what it has to do. Without that person, nothing is ever the same. Which is why I think he says some things are forever in the present tense, because that's where you have to live. Despite what happens in the past, it seems like the present. Without him, it's like gulls that have been blown too far inshore. They cry for lost love, their lost home. You know, you can be there, but it's not the same. You can feel him everywhere, Tom says. And when the sun melts the fog and the wind takes the gulls, and he remembers the smell of oceans, he realizes, you know, it's also his father long gone, all the things that the father brought through his presence, through his laughter, through his exercise of discipline, if you will, all the little peculiarities that a much-loved individual brings to the moment, brings to the time. It's a beautiful scene. It's wistful. It's melancholy. It's true. It's real. And it's much appreciated.
Great comment, Laurent. Naomi, what did you think about this write?
This write, Tom, really hit home hard for me because I remember my granddad growing up on PEI, and I used to bring him maple syrup from Quebec. And, well, we used to bring him maple syrup from Quebec when we went there on vacation afterwards. And he was the kind of, even if it was that generation, he was still the kind to bake and to cook on the big iron cast stove that was in the kitchen. And I remember him making us stuff and pouring, eating it with maple syrup. And all the way through, it's just filled with vivid imagery. And, the gulls crying, blowing too far inshore, cry for a lost home, their lost home. I think that was an amazing way to start that second part of it. And the fog and everything. And, you know, and we lived the house was right beside the Cape. So we could see the lighthouse, and, you know, my grandfather and my uncles and all that, they were fishermen. So, this really hits a sensitive chord in me, and I just dug into this, and it's just beautifully written.
Oh, thank you.
Great comment, Naomi. And Pam, why don't I take it to you?
Oh, this is a beautiful, heartfelt tribute to your father and his memory, and about the legacy of love left behind by a man who takes care of his family and loves his family. And I love, really appreciate how the risen waffle, smothered in butter and maple syrup, and the smell of the ocean and the sound of the gulls and the fog are all things that remind you of your father. Just absolutely wonderful imagery and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Yeah, you know, the fog blows off the lake in tatters like letters read too often, obscuring the presence with memories. Just some fantastic metaphors used throughout here, Tom, as usual. And I just really enjoyed this quite a bit, so very well done. Looks like Pam, looks like you have yours on the board next. Why don't you give that a read anytime you're ready?
Okie dokie. This is To See and Know, and it goes like this. The poetic voice of your prelude ink, a spilling out of your secret vision, the epic parallels within the blink, the bleeding of your divine incision. When your endangered spirit travels on, who left behind will know and who will see. when flesh and bones are buried, self is gone. All that your imprisoned heart longed to be. Humanity's eyes will then see and know the starlight legacy of your splayed words, your brewing of thoughts in eccentric glow, blending gods of earth and sky with neon chords. When steps of death become your final race, what of yours shall generations embrace? End poem.
Great read and write, Pam. Thomas, why don't we start with you on this one?
Could you ask somebody else, please?
Yes, absolutely. Let's go with Naomi on this one.
Yeah, well, this starts out the really, you know, to the point right away, the poetic voice of your preluding spilling out of your secret vision, the epic parallels within the blank, the bleeding of your divine incision. And, oh, wow, it's so well written and so, and the rhyme is just, it's effortless. It doesn't even seem like a rhyme. It's so deep and it's, the words are so well sewn together in this piece. It's just amazing, Pam. And it's haunting too, right down to the last two lines there, when steps of death become your final race, what of yours shall generations embrace? And it's so true, you know. What will we be remembered? It's kind of haunting in a way, you know. You wish that people will remember something. But, really well written, beautiful piece.
Thank you, Naomi.
Great comment. Yeah, Pam, I really enjoyed this one. You know, to see and know when your endangered spirit travels on, who left behind will know and who will see. When flesh and bones are buried, self is gone. Now you're in all that your imprisoned heart longed to be. You know, it's what will happen next, and will it be satisfying to know? And you know, and you know, truth is that, you know, we want to leave a legacy, but you know, will we even care at that point? You know, when you talk about an endangered spirit and what will be left behind, and is that all an imprisoned heart long for, is to be gone and to be, and let your spirit travel? You know, maybe poetry and all of these things that are left behind are just a prison of this planet and this place in the long run. But I thought that this was a great write, Pam, and very well done.
Thank you, Dexter.
Laurent, what did you think about this one?
I love poems that Pam writes that rhyme, because the rhyming is always superb, as is her phrasing. When your endangered spirit travels on, who left behind will know and who will see. When flesh and bones are buried, self is gone. All that your imprisoned heart longed to be. I read that stanza and it just cut deeply in me, because all of us have an imprisoned heart. We all have a secret vision. We all offer our words and thoughts, some bizarre, some immortal. But of everything that you write, of everything that you have communicated, speaks to the last two lines, the one steps of your final race. What of your race? I mean, I just think that it's so tight and it really offers clues to life. So it is an absolutely excellent.
Great comment, Laurent. And Scofaziana, what did you think about it?
I loved it. I think it's a really beautiful and eloquent response to the prompts. Like everyone was saying, the rhyming is just seamless, you know. It makes it sound great, but it's not like one of those noticeable things where it's like there's a hard stop and you think about the rhyme as you're reading it. It flows so nicely, and then you realize later it's because it has that rhyming. And I agree about having great phrasing too. That line that everyone keeps mentioning, when your endangered spirit travels on. There's something really special about that line. And the last two lines of the third stanza, your brewing of thoughts in eccentric glow, blending gods of earth and sky with neon chords. I love that, brewing of thoughts in eccentric glow. That could be a title to a book or something. I love that line.
Well, thank you. Is Dexter on mute or something?
Perhaps.
Oh, he had to step away for a moment. Okay.
There has been mass dropping. Okay, Dex and Laurent. It was kind of fuzzy there for a minute, so they might be calling back to try to fix that.
Okay.
And in the meantime,
comment, or is he still hiding from commenting?
Tom, are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Would you like to comment?
Okay, I actually just already typed something out, so I'm just going to read it. The thoughts we find when we read another's works, we are moved by the selection of words, the feelings created, the wonder that flows through us. At the same time, who else will value them? Who else will be moved? Then, when time goes by, so many of us have strived to create a truly great piece, and so many of us are just members of a crowd and do not stand out. The hope for another, perhaps an echo we have about ourselves, and when death comes, does our poetry have enough strength to go on without us? Yeah, the structure, the imagery, it drives deep the wonder of all the effort we pour into each work, all the energy we give each thing we create. And just like it's a wonder to find out if you made a difference in anyone's life, so is the dream to have all those things you created, at least one of them, live on. And you capture all of that beautifully, wonderfully done.
Thank you, Tom.
Yes, I agree with everything he just said. You really did capture that wonderfully. Sorry about the crackling on the line. I'm not sure what that is, but it seems like it's calmed down now. And then hopefully Dex will rejoin us soon. I know Laurent said he went to go get some batteries. So while they figure out their technical issues, I will read a poem by Arliss. This is called Yes. Number one, your body says yes to the clean, well-lighted night, an embrace of the wild. You rise a flutter, a spiral of pale blue ribbons encircles your hair, your waist, your arms, your legs. Above the red-black earth, you wander in exile, expelled from your homeland, cast into the incipient perils of the self. Two, rain peppers the ceramic tiles of orange, green, and maroon, like champagne spilling from an emerald magnum, bubbles pooling in U-shaped cradles along the rugged roofline. Splatters smear the ink on your papers, leaving wells of black as magic words drain across the page. Too much water kills, too many poems fill the scrolls of ancient sages, meditating on the mysteries of the world, why it exists instead of the fire and flux that leave nothing saturated or sustained, nothing solid or pure, only fire-fed kindling of night. Three, I say yes to your body. as it floats overhead, aimlessly advancing, restlessly recovering. The iridescent glow of stars, polished with the brilliance of navanas and novas, of the nervous pacing of God. Beyond the reaches of time, the future homesteads the past, laying down roots of memory, tangled in threads of desire, footholds in the sheer sides of butts, gathered in orange deposits of desert wind, and the softest clay. You sculpt your figure into the cliff, cover it in diaphanous designs of grazing deer, yearning for clarity, meaning, and rest. The body knows only water and blood, splashing them on the red and black earth, burbling in rivets of yes. End poem. And Pam, would you like to comment?
Absolutely. I thought this was just a beautiful, right, wonderful imagery and metaphors. I like how it seems as if the basic message of it is the joy of saying yes, because yes is a word that means you've made a decision. Yes is a word that moves things forward. It's a word that changes your mind if you say yes to getting married, or yes to love, or yes to a new job. I really like this of all the way through, but especially the sense of beyond the reaches of time, the future homes as the past, laying down roots of memory, tangled in threads of desire. Just a wonderful rite all the way through, and very well done.
I agree. Well said. Thomas, what did you think?
Oh, I love the fact that as you were reading, you used the numbers because it helps to make distinct each vignette separate from the others, so that, yeah, they're a whole, but they aren't, one isn't, you know, run right into the other. I like that way of reading it. This has both a really deep spiritual feel to it, as well as a sensual and ecstatic. Your body says yes to the clean, well-lighted night and the embrace of the wild. Oh, there's so much of the of sensuality and sex in that. You rise, a flutter, a spiral of pale blue ribbons that circle you. That whole opening beginning is just sensuous. And then when he takes it and moves it to a more solid idea of the spiritual relationship you have to your place of birth, you wander in exile, expelled from your homeland, cast into the incipient perils of the self. Yeah, we are distinct from our country. We give it loyalty, but it also plays a place into our hearts. So when we write and when we create, it becomes a reflection. And I love that whole section of too much water kills, too many poems fill the scrolls of ancient sages meditating on the mystery of the world, why it exists, instead of the fire and flux that leaves nothing saturated or sustained, nothing solid or pure, only the fire-fed kindling of the night. There's a passion that he's so quick to speak to, no matter how much, how many academics, esthete, erudite performers of a sense of art try to steal it away. He speaks to that passion. I love the novenas and novas of the nervous pacing of God, the vibrancy that's in that. But I'm a military brat. I moved around a lot. But I have great memories of riding in a car through the West when we decided to drive from California to Washington, D.C., before there were beltways and interstates. And it was back roads and drunken, dusty towns splashed across an empty landscape that seemed to go on forever because the horizon was miles and miles away from where you stood. And he and this foothold in the sheer size of buttes lathered in orange, deposits of desert winds, and the softest clay. That just struck me like an arrow right through the heart. There's just a vibrancy and an energy in this piece that, as gentle as it can be, you figure into the cliff, cover it in diaphanous designs of grazing deer. At the same time, it is so rich, so fierce, and so strong that the yes is almost like a clarion call to come live, come be part of the world, and come show yourself for all that you are. I like this poem.
It's a really great poem. It is. I love the second section the best, I think. You know, going from the water into the fire, really focusing on the elements in the way that it creates its imagery and tells its story. I really liked the sound of the fire and the flux, partly because of the alliteration, but really just the mysteries of the world, why it exists instead of the fire and the flux that leave nothing.
Where it
go? I really love that part. Yeah, it's just. We lost Naomi. Oh, Dex is back. That's awesome. Hi, Dex. Welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back. It sounds like somebody's breaking up also again. But anyway, yeah, glad I could be back here. I missed what we're on, so we're on our list.
Yes, and we lost just about everybody. Laurent had to go. Naomi dropped. Well, Laurent's hopefully coming back. He had to fix his technology. Naomi dropped. Pam will be back. We just got you back. I'm hearing a crackling noise quite a bit, but I'm here. Welcome. I know that you didn't get a chance to hear our list. So I guess we can just move along, and if you'll read the one by Peter Solway.
Well,
yes,
we can do that. I'm going to leave a written comment for our list, obviously, on this one. But, yes, I apologize. I had to step away. We're on Peter Solway, you said? Okay, this is O Mortal Bucket List by Peter Solway. Save a shark from nets. Children in Thailand. From a wrecked man. From a wrecked men. The good lord of atheists. King of honest kings. Bread of desperate peasants. Hoist the flag of liberty. Gas station in the distance. End of the earth to be bound. Iceland and Ezra Pound. Asylum seated, like Muhammad in the desert. Latest book update from the Department of Death. Salvation shark returning, tasty oblivion. No conscience, not vegan nor Christian. $1.90 a liter out west. End poem. And why don't we go to Pam for first comments?
Yeah, I thought this was just a really interesting and thought-provoking write. I like the title, first of all, O Mortal Bucket List. You know, the whole idea of what is important to those who are mortal, and is it really something? Is our mortal ideas of what's important worth pursuing? I thought it was really interesting that he brought up Ezra Pound and in the third sentence that I was interested in all the way through, but especially that he brought up Ezra Pound. I've actually thought of using Ezra Pound's poetry as a prompt before, but, you know, it, the interesting thing with him is that the guy was really quite an unlikable character, and his a lot of his social views were very unpopular, and he just he's kind of one of those people that you borderline think, I don't think I would like this person if I met them. Maybe they'd have interesting conversation with, but I don't think I would like them as a person, which then to me kind of has brought up the question before, and again, this poem also brings up that question. Does somebody have to be a good person in order for the, to leave a legacy, in order to make an impact on the community of art? I also like how there's kind of a bit of snarky bite in no conscience, not vegan nor Christian. To me, that line alone, you know, gives thought to the whole idea that you don't have to be of certain values to have a conscience, to be a good person. So really just an intriguing write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Yeah, you know, to me this just kind of is telling to what is generally man's idea of a lasting impression of what we believe sometimes will live on versus what actually lives on. You know, the save a shark from the nets. You know, we always think that we're so important. Children in Thailand from erect men. You know, the good Lord, which is a very obviously kind of a raw statement, but the good Lord from atheists. But he's just kind of going down in its the reality of kind of what is lived on. You know, hoisting the flag of liberty. You know, how many people have died in our nation or in of all the nations so that the flag could fly, you know, and that's what their legacy kind of is dying for that flag to be held up there by kings and by kings that that are bloodthirsty and are looking to make a dollar. And are looking and looking and presidents that are looking to make a dollar. And so it's playing into people's naive nature that they can live on, but reality though that the what does live on is the gas and the money and things like that. So very raw look at the prompt, and very well done by Peter. Faziano, what did you think about this one?
It definitely has like a raw, gritty feel to it. I liked Hoist the Flag of Liberty, Gas Station in the Distance, and then later on the ending with $1.90 a liter out west, because tying the gas station in the distance to that flag of liberty relates to the fact that, I mean, there are wars happening possibly because of, you know, our desire in the West. You know, there's a lot of kind of interference that our countries have done and stirred up fights because of that desire for oil. So I feel like, or gas, I feel like this is a reference to, you know, the hunt for natural resources and how that can get twisted, and maybe sometimes our legacy is not necessarily a good thing as a society. I think this is very dark, but very intelligent.
Great comment, Faziana. Did we lose Thomas?
No, I'm here.
All right, Thomas, why don't you give us a comment on this one?
I'll just I'll read what I've written, and I'll make another comment. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Like a title to a spaghetti western, this poem speaks louder than its words and strikes home to those who are willing to think past the curtains hanging over their windows. There are in each verse, I could go on forever about certain things, but I'm going to touch on the Iceland and Ezra Pound asylum seated like Mohammed in his desert. You know, he was committed to keep him from being taken before court and found guilty of treason. He was enchanted, and that's an understatement, with the whole idea behind Hitler and the Third Reich and purity and all that other stuff. And maybe he was a little insane, though that is highly questionable. But at the same time, are the works greater than the man? I remember when Paul McCartney said that the Beatles were more popular than the Bible. And then they had DJs having people come to, you know, local high school stadiums where they burned all the Beatle records. I can't give you the comic's name, but there was a comic who once said, you know, if you want to weaken a word, like let's say the N-word, and make it so that it no longer has the power that we've given to it, let's use it all the time. Say it all the time. Say it until it stops meaning anything. Because when you're afraid to use it, it carries far more weight than it should have. And who really, and does God really need to be protected from atheists? Last time I checked, he was a whole lot bigger than the books that that people run around with thinking like it's a user manual. Yeah, there's a whole lot of bad folks out there, and we should be doing everything in our power to stop them. But sometimes we might want to stop and think about how much do we really know the difference between the good, the bad, and the ugly. Anyway, I'll stop there.
That's a great point, Thomas. You know, yeah, who really are the bad people at the end of the day, and who really are the good people? And a lot of times it's the good people dying fighting the good people, mm-hmm. you know? And so, great comment. And Faziano, why don't you take us to our next piece?
Okay, we have an audio for Martha Gettle, so I'm going to play that.
Life is the Road We Travel On by Martha Gettle. People that you meet every day judge you by what you do and say. If you want to be remembered with a smile, you must learn to sow love along the miles. If along the road of your life, all you ever sow is strife. If you can never find anything good to say, that's how you'll be remembered at the end of the day. 'Cause life is the road we travel on. We determine how we'll be remembered when we're gone. So sow some seeds of kindness on the way, and always have a pleasant thing to say. 'Cause a frown won't get you any friends, and being grumpy won't help you in the end. So just put a smile on your face and leave behind you a happy place. 'Cause life is the road we travel on. We determine how we'll be remembered when we're gone. So sow some seeds of kindness on the way, and always have a pleasant thing to say. If all you plant is stress in your life, you will leave behind you a lot of strife. People will take a deep breath when you're gone, and be glad that you moved on.
Fantastic SoundCloud, Martha, and thank you for the lovely read and doing that. As Pam always says, if you can't join the show, SoundCloud is the next best thing on getting your voice heard and getting your read across the way that you would like. This was a perfect example of it because she sang it so wonderfully. Pam, why don't we start with you on comments?
Absolutely. I always enjoy SoundClouds by Martha. What I particularly like about this one is that she reminds us that legacies don't have to be some big thing. You know, they don't have to be like intellectual endeavors. A legacy can simply be the love and kindness that you show people, the joy that spreads across your face and shows in your actions. And by being that kind of person, the kind of person that people like, because they see that kindness and that love and that joy in you, you will be remembered. And as long as you're remembered and people talk about you in ways that, you know, speak beautifully of you, that is a legacy to leave behind. So this is a wonderful, heartfelt song and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Thomas, what did you think about this write?
Thomas actually dropped.
Okay, Faziana, what did you think about this write?
I liked it. I like that she uses that kind of garden metaphor there where she's saying, like, if you plant, all you plant is stress in your life, then you'll leave behind a lot of strife. So you have to, you know, plant the seeds of something positive, and that let that be what people remember. You know, I don't think you can, you know, force a smile all the time. There's going to be down times, but to try your best to leave a positive impact on people. I really like the line, sow some seeds of kindness on the way, and always have a pleasant thing to say. If you sow kindness, then that will spread. And, you know, it's one of those things where if you're nice to someone, they're more likely to be nice to the next person they see, and they're more nice. Like, it's kind of a pay it forward type of thing. And your legacy can be sort of an unspoken one where there's still that chain of kindnesses going on, and you started it. So I think that's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. Great comment, Faziana. Yeah, that, you know, you reap what you sow, and that kindness can change somebody's day. That kindness can change somebody's life. It kind of reminded me of, of my uncle told me a story about he walked home a different route one day, or usually would walk with his friends, but decided to walk home one day, like in middle school. And so it was kind of a different route for him. And he walked home, and there was a guy he doesn't normally walk home with that he walked home with and talked to that he later ran into like 30 years later and said that you saved my life that day. He said, I was going to go home and kill myself, but you walked home and just happened to start talking to me. And it changed my mood around that day. And so, you know, just that kind of talk about your kindness can be just a lasting impression. You know, when talking about that guy went on to have a family, that guy went on to do things, right? Your kindness is something that can live on as a legacy. So fantastic, right? Fantastic read, and very well done.
That is a great story. Thank you for sharing that. You know, it's true. You don't know the impact that you have on people. So let that impact be a good thing. I'm glad you shared that.
Faziana, would you like me to take over the board here for a little bit? I know we can get to B2.
MK? I just noticed that you... Yes, there's an audio for MK.
Yeah.
So here we go. This is from MK.
Endless Echoes by MK Rock. Luna's pyrite shimmer, host a resonant chill. coarse bills heralding the indelible upon Chilean black coasts, gild-tumbled whispering of a beloved native son. His ink lineage laps through lines still churning, drumming pulse within perpetual tide wells of liberty, resin polishing rough regions of mountainous spine. A flock wreathes him on this night once more. Loyal ink-stained devotees all, they come. Candles surge in petal processions align. Wave after wave breaks there. Brine flows as memorial stones are placed, tokening grief, humanity's pebbles, enforcing a build of yet more rock walls. Papa, you understood, even if they never could. Gone is gone. You never were, never will be. Your esprit and energy resonates in eternally. A pulsar form, merely changing shape, shifting rhythms, strung of hope or sun-baked grounds, cleansing breath spurring freedom sounds, beats vibe in blood-coursing mud, covered hands. Artisans crafting dedicated stands to shared commitment, voices impassioned for healing a well-loved land. Gone is gone. You never were, never will be. Your presence keenly present today in this Pays de Poetas. Indigo wishes endow monuments breathing of life instead. Astral fields of star-blazed discovery. Desert grounds flowering with odic sight. Reverie infused by ventricle light. You would chuckle, Papa, preferring roads to retainers, smooth pavers laid in legacy paths, aggregate pave in foundations enduring, press to ease passage of open way, beyond limit stumble of bridge arc for understandings. End poem.
Great read, Mindy, and breathtaking poem here. Faziana, I mean, this one's going to be difficult to really rip open all the layers of this one. Faziana, why don't you give it a shot first?
Sure. I thought this was absolutely beautiful. It has such a wonderful connection to Papa in this. There's something like eternal of that feeling. I really liked when she's talking about the memorial stones being placed, tokening grief, humanity's pebbles enforcing a build, like humanity's pebbles. I really like that phrasing. I thought that it was beautifully read. I'm so happy that she gave us the audio. And there's something about the contrast of you never were, never will be, your presence keenly present today. So, like, he still feels like he's there. So to say that he never was and never will be isn't true, because even though he's gone, he's still there. He's still felt. He lives on in the people who remember him in that love. There is a legacy that is left. And the line that really hit me in the heart was, you would chuckle, Papa, because, you know, sometimes you have those moments where something happens and you really wish that there's someone who you lost who could see that, who could hear that, who could share in that experience, because you know that it would be a moment that they would enjoy or treasure or have some kind of comment about. So that one really hit me. And she has such a beautiful vocabulary, like aggregate, like, I don't know, Mindy's work is fantastic. So MK Rock is also known as Mindy. I'm sorry, I keep using opposite names, so it might be confusing people that they're both her name. So this is wonderful. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I have to agree. This is absolutely beautiful. And as always, she just has an exquisite and an intelligent vocabulary. And I like how heartfelt this is, and as both and duly serves as both a tribute to Pablo Picasso, but also, not Pablo Picasso, sorry, wrong person, that's the artist. You know who I mean. Oh, my gosh, what is his name again? Pablo Neruda. Yeah, that's it. I'm so sorry. And also perhaps, you know, to someone she knows, perhaps to, you know, a person that she was close to, a legacy left behind of love, and someone that had a, you know, this it seems to me to be about somebody who had a powerful presence that didn't worry about the riches of life, but was always there just appreciating it and enjoying it. And I really like the use of the word esprit. Your esprit and energy resonates on eternally, a pulsar from merely changing, shape-shifting. I mean, that whole stanza is just absolutely beautiful and a very well-done poem.
I agree. And Dex, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this was a beautiful write. And, you know, it says here, Papa, his picture reminded me of my Papa. But, yeah, this is, you know, where my mind went is kind of time is, you know, a man-made concept. You know, it's what is time, right? It's what is tomorrow? What is yesterday? A lot of things is the truth is only thing that we can really guarantee is right what's in the now and what's happening. Gone is gone. You never were, never will be. When somebody's gone, what you know? What is that person now? What does that say about time? All of the legacy and all of these things that are man-made things, because the possibility is that this person is gone, but they always were everything, and they always will be everything. Everything that's all around, everything that's everywhere, you know. And that is your legacy. Your legacy is everything and everything that it is encompassing that's all around. Is kind of almost what I took of this, and it was something that was very abstract and from a different kind of angle. I could be totally wrong on that. But I enjoyed this write quite a bit.
That was an interesting interpretation. I love hearing what everyone thinks of it. What should we read next, Dexter?
Well, we could go to Captain B2's. If you would mind giving that a read.
You know, we actually have an audio from her, but I will play it.
Oh, awesome.
Chalk on the Pavement, poem. Cro-Magnon man drew on cave walls, seeking to leave an imprint of his life's events, images of beast and man, hunt and harvest, brandishing his art, wielding images in bold strokes, giving no thought to if the message would survive, while chalking tribal chronicles on bare rock faces. As tiny fists smear with fragile powdery sticks, rendering with unfettered abandon wide swaths of brilliant hues on concrete and asphalt without regard for whether or not the images will last, the chalky colors linger for a time, enduring on the rough surfaces and then disintegrating. In the tradition of Herodotus, celebrating all the days of the year, the one most commemorated is the anniversary of birth. We mark the milestones, imprinting the events on convenient surfaces without regard for their ephemeral and fragile nature. We seek immortality in the remnants left behind, the painted canvases, the inked pages, wayposts and landmarks, shadows and shards, tracings of our neural energy, bequests of our experiences, to imprint our corporeal journey upon the eternal, our legacies to generations as yet unrealized. Yet the most imperishable evidence of our existence lies in the life well lived, the sharing of the soul, the generosity of spirit, the outstretched hand of fellowship, our communion with humankind and our fellow travelers, the true legacy of abiding memory and enduring fame is in the spirit of leaving the world a little better than we found it. For in reality, the three words that will change the world are not, I love you, but instead are, let me help. To truly live life is to touch other lives along the way, writing the story of your life upon the inestimable sky of mind. And if we do not give to others of our life and love, our existence is as evanescent as chalk on the pavement. End poem.
That was a great SoundCloud. Thank you so much, Captain B2, a.k.a. Bobby, for sharing the audio with us. It's great to hear it in your own words. I found this really interesting, how it talks about, you know, the cave walls and the art on stones and how, you know, the things were chronicled in that way and how different societies, you know, put it in different ways. It makes me think about how, you know, there used to be quilts that told stories, the tapestries on the walls. I was just talking in a conference to someone who was talking about how there's kind of like this misconception that Indigenous peoples didn't record their stories, they just said them out loud. And they didn't necessarily record them in the way that Europeans did, but they did pass on those stories. And there was an example of this cloak made out of, I think it was a polar bear skin, from long, long time ago. And in that cloak, there were, like, similar to the pictographs, I'm not sure the correct word for them, but it was, like, images telling the story of all the things that happened to the people who owned that particular skin. And it was passed on to the next generation of hunters, and there was stories there. So, anyway, I just learned that yesterday, so I was like, this is so cool that there are different ways of passing things on. That's a little bit off topic. It just made me think of it in this poem. I thought that this was a really intriguing and thought-provoking poem, and the idea of leaving the world a little bit better than we found it, being, you know, the true legacy, is I think a beautiful thing and a great thing to strive for. So I just loved this. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a beautiful write, and I too like how she mentions about how art and writing has always been an important part of, you know, keeping history alive, of remembering. And I also like how she reminds us that when it comes to love, you know, actions speak loudly. You know, instead of just saying I love you, you know, it's instead say let me help. And I really like this all the way through, but especially yet the most imperishable evidence of our existence lies in the life well lived, the sharing of the soul, the generosity of spirit, the outstretched hand of fellowship. Just a wonderful rite and very well done.
It really is. And Dexter, would you like to comment?
Yes. You know, that end part is just stunning. I mean, really, this whole entire thing is just beautiful. And a lot of times, too, you know, when it's just you saying the truth, sometimes it's just in, you know, true in your heart, sometimes it's just easy to lay it out simple and plain. And that's the way that she delivered it in her SoundCloud, and that's the way that it written also. For in reality, the three words that will change the world are not I love you, but instead let me help. Like you said, your actions speak so much louder than words. And the importance of fellowship and the importance of being together and uniting, you know, and that's what, you know, so much things are set out there to divide us. And that's why, you know, if you were to look at something that's evil is something that, you know, somebody out there doing things that are divisive to everybody. But I just thought that this was just a brilliant write and very well done, and I'm glad that she submitted that.
Me too. And what should we read next?
Okay. Pam, if I could get you to read this next one. This is by Stephen Wellman.
All right. And this is called Dance by Stephen T. Wellman, and it goes like this. The intriguing enigma bellows daily. Restless waves reach a sandy shoreline, singing a soulful tune, whispering waters chant, dancing beautifully on shores of time. Life is a beach, a beautifully expressed timepiece. Each granular grain of sand, brief misty moments in divine dimension. Here today, washed away the next. We cast our lines in the ocean of humanity, fishing for similes and smiles. People are magical metaphors, riding whimsical waves to shore, dancing in the here and now. Two-stepping a syntax. Doesn't matter we have two left feet. Loving others and sharing joy is a dance of life. Creating ethereal expressions, beautiful art, drawing lines in the sand. Quickly disappearing when our time runs out. Our lives are living poetry on display. Our actions never sink in the sand. They are heart prints burned into the soul. We never know the true value of a moment until it becomes a memory. We often miss those moments. We often miss those dances with others. One day, our setting sun will rest on a sinking horizon, opalescent souls dancing on the waves, spiritual beings casting aside our weighted shells, no more worries about going under. End poem.
That was a beautiful read, Pam, and a great poem, Stephen. Dex, will you comment first, please?
Yes. Lovely, right? You know, and to call it Dance is just an incredible title. Dancing delightfully on the shores of time. Life is a beach, a beautiful express timepiece. You know, and the other part that I just loved is our lives are living poetry on display. Our actions never sink in the sand. Their heart prints burned into the soul. This has just got just lovely and wonderful lines written throughout. This write is just fantastic. And, you know, it's just such a positive thing. You know, it fits. The way that it's written fits the title so much because it just, you know, the people talk about, you know, when you just dance, how it just, it's like impossible to feel bad or to feel negative, you know, and when you do talk about it in that way, you know, he danced on this, right? And it just came out perfectly as far as just in a positive light. So very well done.
I agree. I feel like the writer in me is obsessed with the third stanza, and you know, talking about the wow. Okay, how can I call myself a writer? I can't think of the word for it. Poetic devices. Thank you. The poetic devices that is referencing. Yeah, I'm a poet. I know what things are called. And then the like the human of me, the more emotional side of me, loves that second last stanza that you referenced, Dex. Their heart prints burned into the soul. We never know the true value of a moment until it becomes a memory. Like that, just like sinks in deep. This whole thing is beautiful, and I agree, Dance is a perfect title. Pam, you read it beautifully. Would you also like to comment?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I always appreciate and enjoy Stephen's writing. And what I like about this is it reminds us to enjoy life, to embrace life, you know, to dance and to, you know, sing and express ourselves through our words. And it reminds us that that joy is something that will, the spirit of that joy is something that will be left behind. I really like we cast our lines in the ocean of humanity, fishing for similes and smiles. And I also like that he reminds us that it doesn't matter if you have two left feet. You know, just simply find that way to express your joy. So excellent write and very well done.
It is. And Dexter, what would you like to do next?
Okay, here. Let me go back to the list. It looks like we are on to Blatant B's piece, and I will give that a read. This is R-E-A-L, Rare Exquisite Artifacts Lives. Everyone has a price. Only a few knew what to do, doing what they need to stick to what they believe was true. That's why many names will fade, chasing recognition, waiting to get paid. Notoriety should never be amassed. It should be weighed. It's a selfless act, something that causes impact. It should cause hysteria. It later evolves fact. It exposes the cancer to the mass counteract. The real never live long. They remain unseen until the truth comes along. Some immortalized with words, some with song. I wish I could tell you a story, something that will stick in your brain, something wise and witty, something with purpose and aim, something that says, remember my name. That's why my name will be forgotten, because my intentions weren't true. Did you really think think fame and infamy is true? And they will remember you? Ask yourself, what really did I do? End poem.
That was a great read and write. I like that he acknowledges that if you're doing something just for the sake of being remembered, then maybe it's not worth remembering if you're only doing it for that recognition. It's sort of how a good deed isn't much of a good deed if you're doing it so you can say, I did a good deed. You know, there's this kind of like bragging culture of like the good deeds that you did. I don't know, maybe that's just here. There's this like community forum on Facebook where people post like things. And originally it was like people thanking people for doing things. And now it's like, look at this thing I did. I gave this to this person. I paid for the person in behind me in Tim Hortons. Or like it's just, it's like this bragging thing. And it's like, I don't know. Is it really a good thing if you're doing it for your own self-image? And I think he recognizes that in this. But there is that longing to be recognized, wanting to stick. And the thing is, I think B does have that power. And in real life, he you know, he does say things that are wise and witty, and he does have purpose and not just scrambling to be known. As much as he says that in this poem, I think that he will be remembered. And I like that he kind of turned REAL into an acronym, Rare Exquisite Artifacts Live Lives. This is smart, and it has heart. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, first of all, I really like what you had to say, Afasiana, about how oftentimes people do the right thing for the wrong reason, like, you know, to get fame, to get exposure. I really like how this right reminds us that certain things are only temporary, that, you know, that some things fade with time. This is just a wonderful right, but I do particularly like it. Is a selfish act, something that causes impact, it should cause hysteria. It later evolves fat, exposes the cancer to mass counteract. There's just some really just hard-hitting rhyme and lines in that. And I really also like the complete ending stanza, and how it ends with a question. And the question really makes us think about, you know, what we do, is it really going to make an impact? And whether it does or not, was it really worth it if we did it for the wrong reason? Excellent, right, and very well done.
And Dex, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this write, and I agree with you. You know, there's these people out there that are giving out money, you know, and videotape it and things like that. And really what it makes me think about is Prince. You know, Prince from here in Minneapolis, but from Prince, he, you know, as part of his religion, and this is something that just really stood out to me, is that he never was directly connected to all of the things that he was doing because he wanted them to know that, you know, it was true. And so, like, what he would have, like, his publicists do or people around him is that they would call, like, certain charities or certain things and just say, he wants to help. And, like, they wouldn't even bring up his name, but he would cut the check for $5 million and not have any of not have him connected to it at all. Sometimes the people at the charity would figure it out who was actually involved with it, but he refused to get that acknowledged into the media, and he refused to be doing it for himself. And that was something that really stood out to me, and I think that that's a legacy in itself. You know, Prince obviously has a great legacy in music, but his charitable work is substantial. And, you know, he did that all with the idea that he never really wanted any fame or anything from that. And matter of fact, if you broke the word out that he was coming in to help, he would kind of fall back on doing it. So anyway, it was just a fantastic read by Poetic B, or Blatant B, and just had me thinking of that as well. So where we're going to next, Afasiana, if I could get you to read My Obituary by Goran Way.
All right, this is My Obituary by Goran Way. I'm reading my obituary. I wrote it just in case the virus calls for me. So it's all my lies that you will see, not the awkward silence of reality if the virus calls for me. But if you're looking for the truth, it's buried in my grave. The virus called for me. End poem. Ooh, that's eerie. The virus called for me at the end. The shift from if the virus calls, then it has called. So it's from death that this is being said. There's something very eerie about that. I like that it acknowledges that if it's something that you wrote yourself, you write your own obituary, it's going to be what you want people to think, it's not the truth. I like the awkward silence of reality, because sometimes that's what it is. It's like, what did I do with my life? Acknowledging that maybe it's not a big obvious thing of accomplishment, and the truth being buried with you. Sometimes that's a thing. And it says in the Anne, we are all waiting. You know, we death is coming for us all, and maybe instead of just waiting for it, we should try to make the most of what we have. So this was well done. It gave me goosebumps a little bit with the virus called for me. It says this was written a year ago, so, you know, pandemic times, and it shows. Dex, what did you think?
Yeah, this was a great piece, a great brevity. You know, yeah, my obituary, the truth is what other people say about you. You know, that's your legacy. The truth is, you know, even though we have this culture, and in order to carry on, you know, you can't carry on caring what other people think. But it's just your actions at the end of the day will speak and direct the people that matter the most on what to think, on writing your obituary, you know. And so I just think that this was a great brevity and very well done.
I agree. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought this was a clever brevity that, reminds us of something that we were probably all thinking about a year ago. You know, if we don't make it through, what is our legacy left behind? What do we want people to know, and what don't we want people to know? And then I like that in kind of a twisted, humorous way, it reminds us that truth is never fully spoken in obituaries. First of all, because you have a limited amount of words. And second of all, because you're not going to use those limited amount of words to say what an ass somebody was, you know. So it's definitely.
You died my son that was a total loser.
Right, there you go. Yep.
I think you guys should write someone
like
that. Nobody
in the family likes him, and then he's done.
There you go. Yeah, I thought this was really creative and very well done.
All right, Pam, could I get you to read the next one?
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right, we have Rust on Art by Sopika Kalita, and it goes like this. Let not the rust on art caricature thy dwindling sight, as all effervescent art is not evading, to deceive thy worthwhile, as art is thine esteemed friend, thou feel in the absence its pungence. Even in decays of darkest hour, art survives as hope of thine. Let not the rust on art plummet to confiscate the illustrious moments, to obliterate the remaining versatility, to display the alluring empathy, ethereal disposition to wrestle with the angel art. Let not the rust on art to extricate the visionary spectrum. As times and tide waits for none, rust on art will swipe away the long solace as thou don't have a monument to exhibit the consecrated salvation. Rust on art is perennial to enlightenment. Thou not be left alone. In utter dismay and confusion, let not the rust on art drift in sheer embarrassment to ravage thy entity and esteem. The rust on art is venomous, most callous of all contamination, as rust on art have a clot with thine actualization. Let not the rust on art crust to burst on thy luminous volumes, the sight of which allowed thou to be a harbinger of decadial trust, to leave the bequest to the apathetic strayed progeny behind, as rust on art is not comrade of thy appealing, fictitious, gloomy fights and poem.
Well done, Pam. And great poem from Silpika Kalita. I really liked the lines, "The rust on art is venomous, most callous of all contamination." It's like there's something about allowing art to fall away, to not be cared for, that is vicious, and that venomousness, it's like it's passing on the darkness of it to the next thing. And it makes me think of like the Dark Ages, where you know, there was kind of this lull of not having artistic ability, not ability, like it wasn't celebrated until the Renaissance, when it all seemed to come back. But there was this time where it was like a big slump for getting anything done, because there was too many horrible things happening, and people didn't have time or energy or money to do the celebration of art, and to let art fall away lets kind of a piece of our heart and our intelligence and our I don't know, that spark of humanity fall away. So there's this condemnation all throughout this of, you know, this it's awful to let art rust and be forgotten and be wrecked by being abandoned this way. Really interesting poem. Dex, what did you think?
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's a shame when art is not cared for, and you know, and because it was, you know, the art is who we are as a society. It's you know, when the art is not cared for, you got to assume that the society is not cared for. It kind of is a loss, a detachment from humanity that everyone must be almost experiencing. And that's why it's such a major, like almost a sin and such a sad sight. But I thought that this was a fantastic write and very well done.
And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I think this is just absolutely beautiful. You know, I am concerned that you and Dexter don't have enough money to pay me for every one of these $5 words, but we'll work something out. but no, I really like how this is about the salvation of art, the saving it, reminding us that it is consecrated, that it is, you know, something that makes a difference, that represents a society, and should never just be cast aside and treated lowly. So a wonderful rite and very well done.
I agree. And it looks like, Dexter, you have your poem up, so let's hear it. Dex? You're muted.
Sorry. All right, just wear my glasses. Sit, my love, as I immortalize your image, precisely capture your likeness so vivid, long black hair waving like a ribbon, your mustache and pinkish skin pigment. Sit natural and relax only a few minutes. Yes, just like that. Now hold that position. Key traits will be the final, very final additions, a reflection that to you, I'm sure, looks much different. Black soulless eyes showing not a smidgen of remorse after you bloodied me in the kitchen. Your posture dripping with narcissism, a facial expression that cannot be hidden, showcasing on how you look down upon women. What do you think? Ugly? Lucky you're not forced to kiss them. End poem.
Wow. this has some harshness that is, you know, called for. If he is abusive, then calling him out in this, and it looks like it's based on a portrait that she did of her husband, and I like that as a way of revealing someone's true self. You know, like maybe in public, he didn't have that same outward quality, and to show through his, like you say, through his posture, through his facial expression, those eyes, that there's so much in it that you can see the way that he is with her, and her kind of desperate expression within it. I think you bring that to life, and she's using the painting to reveal this side of him, and you use your poem to reveal what's in the... I love when art and poetry go together, and it's like this circle of how it works with each other. I think my favorite line is your posture dripping of narcissism, to have it just like ooze that sense of entitlement that narcissists have, and that feeling of control, to show that with posture is intense. And I think that it was done in the painting, and you captured that really well. Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I thought this was just an excellent write all the way through. And I do like how he captured her thoughts and her point of view, and how she, you know, probably saw her abuser, her narcissist. I like how he describes the painting of the picture, and I especially like the line, black soulless eyes showing not a smidgen of remorse after you bloodied me in the kitchen, your posture dripping of narcissism. Just a strong write, and definitely a good one to bring back out. So very well done.
Thank you. I've missed one here by Shelley. If you want to give that a read, Faziana, we can at least get it done quick, I think. Not that long.
All right, here we go. Etched in You by Shelley Britton. My darling, you may miss me and wish for a place to feel that I can be again with thee, tranquil garden for us to heal. You may want to decorate the place that I rest in peace as a way to commemorate the life you wish didn't cease. Maybe somewhere I was set free when shaken into wind I was carried over stunning landscapes and sea, a mark where me and earth married. Don't carve my name onto stone. No need to state my end or start. Through you I will become well known. I left a deep imprint on your heart. You carry me with you everywhere in the stories you excitedly tell. Through you, it's also my words you share, etched in your mind, which nothing can quell. End poem. Oh, I really like that last phrase, which nothing can quell, like nothing is going to stop this mind of her loved one. That is so wonderful. I love that spirit of living on and wanting more than just a gravestone. We have 90 seconds, Dex, before we get cut off of the air. Do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this write. I think that it was almost written about a child, and, you know, and just this the legacy is living on is through in your children, and it, she wrote it from a position of great pride. I thought that this was a stunning write and very well done.
All right, thank you so much to Pam and Laurent and Thomas and Naomi for calling in, and to all those who provided SoundClouds or poems for us to read. We really appreciate you contributing to the show. Thank you, and I hope that we hear from you all again.
Stick around in a half hour. Pam's show is coming up, so hopefully you guys can make it. So good night, everybody. Stay tuned. I'm going to get